IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Precautions in the name of air security are about to be taken to a level unimaginable in the United States only a few years ago. The Washington Post reports the Bush administration is expected to order as soon as next month the first step in setting up databases on all air passengers to be used to color code each air traveler according to his or her potential threat level. Passengers coded red would be stopped from boarding, yellow would mean additional screening at airport security checkpoints, and green would mean an only standard level of security. Airlines and airline reservation companies would reportedly be forced to turn over all passenger records to U.S. government officials who struck out in a trial program which was based on voluntary surrender of airline industry data. One U.S. soldier was killed and two were wounded Monday in a roadside bombing in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad, one U.S. commander said. Meanwhile, on Monday, Iraq's top Shiite Muslim cleric, in a full-page advertisement, reiterated his demand for the country's next legislature to be elected as he hardens his opposition to U.S. plans for regional caucuses. The Baghdad killing was the first reported combat death among U.S. troops since Friday, when nine soldiers were killed when a medevac helicopter was shot down near Fallujah. The latest casualties were from the 1st Armored Division, the command said. The Supreme Court has set the stage for a series of rulings on the reach of presidential power, decisions that could arrive just as voters focus on whether to endorse George W. Bush in the 2004 election. Since November, the justices have voted to take up five cases that test the president's power to act alone and without interference by Congress or the courts. The case taken up Friday may be the broadest of all. 2 years ago, the White House said the president had the power to designate U.S. citizens unlawful enemy combatants and hold them in secret military custody without filing charges or allowing them to plead their innocence. More after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A German woman caused more than $128,000 worth of damage when an attempt to back out of her spot in a parking garage ended with her car on its roof and four other vehicles damaged. Police said the woman reversed sharply out of her spot on the upper level of a parking garage in the town of Kirchen, Germany, demolishing a parked Nissan and damaging a Mitsubishi next to it. She then accelerated forward, speeding through her original parking space and over a low protective wall, pitching her Audi 20 feet down onto a lower level of the car park. The car crashed into a Renault, hit a Citroën, and finally came to rest on its roof. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news. You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Before we rush full tilt buggy into the 04 election cycle, let's hear a word from our sponsors. Yes, the good folks who pay for the campaigns of George W. and most of the Democratic presidential contenders should be acknowledged before next year's vote. I say we should highlight these corporate interests now, just to get a sense of who's buying what in our land of the free. Of course, the corporate big spenders and the politicos they purchase insist that nothing is being bought, that the corporations putting up $100,000 to $1 million each want only good government. If you believe that, Pollyanna, you should check out something called Internal Political Party Documents at this website, campaignlegalcenter.org. Here you'll find the smoking quid pro quo between the corporate contributors and the political contributees of both parties. For example, there's a letter from the Republican Party chairman to the drug giant Bristol-Myers Squibb requesting $250,000. Does the letter ask for good government? Not exactly. It encloses the GOP's health care proposal, asking Bristol-Myers for any changes they'd like to make. The Politico says to the CEO, quote, "We must keep the lines of communication open if we want to continue passing legislation that will benefit your industry." There's another letter from the Republican finance chairman to the chairman of Global Crossing, the corrupt telecommunications giant that, at the time, was pushing for a federal okay of a merger. As an ante, Global Crossing had pledged $100,000 to the party with a promise to hike it to $250,000 if the merger went through. Surprise, it did. So the finance chairman wrote back to the corporate guy, "I am taking the liberty of enclosing an invoice for the additional upgrade." This is Jim Hightower saying, this corporate money is not buying good government, it's buying corruption. To stop it, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the liberal-loving, espresso-drinking, livable-wage-asking, body-piercing, patriotically living, human rights-advocating, privacy rights-demanding, middle-class, promoting, nature-loving, educational-supporting, equality-for-all-understanding Tom Hartman radio program today. Just so you know, we may also talk about those cheap labor-loving, gas-guzzling, debt-spending, billionaire-embracing, millionaire-golfing, politician-purchasing, transnational, corporation-owned, poor-fleecing, preemptive, war-mongering, gambling, groping, and whatever you drink with pretzels-chugging cons today. Just so you know, we love and embrace all here on the Tom Hartman program. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you agree, and especially if you don't. 1-800-895-5937. Always love to hear from you. Lots in the news today. In our first hour, I want to get into this this question of why was Bush planning for preemptive war from day one? Paul O'Neill says this was the first day of the administration. Now, this is the guy who campaigned looking the American public right in the eye, you and me looking us right in the eye and saying, you know, we shouldn't do that nation-building stuff. We shouldn't be getting involved in other people's business. We shouldn't be going around telling the rest of the world, you ought to live just like us. And we certainly should not be involved in foreign adventures. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And then we discover, as soon as he came into office, not only was from day one the plan to invade Iraq. And some may say, well, it was because his daddy didn't finish the job and he wanted to show up his father, you know, some psychobabble thing. Or it was in revenge for Saddam Hussein. You know, there was that story out there for a while that Saddam had paid a hitman to kill George Bush Sr. And it never quite panned out. I mean, it was in the press and everything. You know, it's kind of widely believed, but it may well be one of those vanishing hitchhiker urban legends. Nobody was ever arrested. Nobody was ever convicted, at least to the best of my knowledge. It was one of those things that came and went very quickly. But it might have been that. Maybe George believed
that Saddam had tried to kill his daddy. And they were all, you know, I mean, we could speculate about the psychology of it. But I am more inclined to look at the evidence. The same documents the Judicial Watch pried out of the Cheney Task Force were shown on 60 Minutes last night. And they show very clearly that in April of 2001, this is some 6 months before 9/11, when we knew, according to all the events, now in February of 2001, Colin Powell, in a news conference, said that we had Saddam in a box. He was not a threat to the world or even to the even to his neighbors, because we had destroyed his air force. We were daily patrolling the air over his nation. We had destroyed his weapons of mass destruction. And the guy was, you know, rendered impotent in terms of his ability to attack anybody or harass anybody. There would never again be another Kuwait. But we discover at the same time that in these documents that Cheney, Halliburton CEO Cheney, former Exxon senior executive who has an oil tanker named after her, Condoleezza Rice, and other millionaires and multimillionaires with connections to the oil industry in this administration, were actually carving up the oil fields of Iraq and figuring out who to sell them to. They had a list of over 40 countries and 40 different companies in 40 different countries that were potential purchasers for Iraq, and they went through the roughly 100 oil fields in Iraq and assigned companies to them. Oh, we can sell this one to Royal Dutch Shell, and BP might be interested in this one. I'll bet ConocoPhillips would like this one. You get this? Lots of if this is true, and you know the evidence seems irrefutable that George Bush was planning to attack another nation that was not threatening us or its neighbors in any way. Oh, he had weapons of mass destruction. Everybody knew he had weapons of mass destruction. Yes, in 1993. But by 98, we had had weapons inspectors in there for years. And Scott Ritter had pinned it down to there were just a few sites, two or three sites, where he said they might be hiding something there. We have destroyed everything else. And so Bill Clinton goes in and bombs those sites. And then 4 years, 6 years later, 5 years later, Hans Blix goes in and he looks all over the country and reports back to the United Nations, I can't find anything. It looks to me like it's all gone. Give us another month and we can tell you for sure. Well, David Kaye has had that another month and two and three and four and spent over $1 billion. Do you have any idea how many teacher salaries that would be? $1 billion. That's the cost of putting a man on the moon. David Kaye spent over $1 billion looking for weapons in Iraq. And he found nothing. He's given up. The administration has quietly withdrawn their 400 representatives on the team. It was all a show. And if this is the case, that nearly 500 of our young men and women have died, dead, left behind widows or husbands and children and grieving parents and relatives and friends, because Dick Cheney had decided that he wanted to sell cheap Iraqi oil See, the Iraqi oil is among the cheapest in the world. It's $1.50 a barrel to produce oil in Iraq because it bubbles out of the ground because the wells are relatively untapped. It's $6, $7, $8 a barrel to produce Saudi oil. It costs over $12 a barrel now to produce oil in the United States because our wells are so old. If this was done so that Dick Cheney could sell cheap oil, then the world may well conclude that we are now a rogue nation and that our president is a war criminal. Can you imagine George Bush in The Hague, indicted for attacking a country that represented no danger to us? Paul O'Neill said all the time he was in the administration, he saw no evidence whatsoever. I'll quote him. This is in Time magazine this week. In the 23 months I was there, I never saw anything that I would characterize as evidence of weapons of mass destruction. There were allegations and assertions by people, mostly Ahmed Chalabi, the convicted bank swindler who we have now put in charge of Iraq. He has to be careful. If he goes to Jordan, he goes to prison. They want him for bank fraud. But, O'Neill says, I've been around a hell of a long time, and I know the difference between evidence and assertions and illusions or allusions and conclusions that one could draw from a set of assumptions. To me, there's a difference between real evidence and everything else, he continued, and I never saw anything in the intelligence that I would characterize as real evidence. Keep in mind, this guy is the former chairman of Alcoa Aluminum, one of the world's largest corporations. He served in the Nixon administration, and he served in the Ford administration. He's no dummy, and he understands how government works. He was astounded. He says, for me, the notion of preemption, that the U.S. has the unilateral right to do whatever we decide to do, is a really huge leap. A bit of an understatement there, Mr. O'Neill. And now we have the Army going after this thing. But let me just wrap up this O'Neill thing. President Bush was so disengaged, according to Paul O'Neill, during cabinet meetings. I don't know, what was he, shooting rubber bands at people or chewing on pretzels? Paul O'Neill was so disengaged during cabinet meetings that he was like a blind man in a room full of deaf people, quote, end quote. Now, Paul O'Neill says this on national TV, that George Bush is like a blind man in a room full of deaf people. And, of course, there is now a response. This from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. The headline, Blind and Deaf People Object to Being Compared to Bush Administration. Demand apology from Paul O'Neill. After former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill likened President George W. Bush in his cabinet meetings to, quote, a blind man in a room full of deaf people, end quote, representatives of the blind and deaf demanded a prompt and total apology from the former administration official. Louis Pankow of the Coalition for the Blind and Deaf said, quote, blind and deaf people have a lot to contend with and have had a lot to contend with in the past, but this remark represents a new low. To be compared to President Bush and his cabinet is at the very least hurtful and quite possibly slanderous as well, end quote. While Ms. Pankow would not confirm that the blind and deaf intend to take legal action against Mr. O'Neill for his remarks, she said, quote, we are quite confident that any court would decide that being compared to the Bush administration has damaged the reputation of the blind and the deaf, perhaps irreparably, or irreparably, end quote. Moments after Ms. Pankow's statement, Mr. O'Neill released a statement of his own apologizing for his comments. He said, quote, what I meant to say was that the Bush White House was like a room full of monkeys banging away on typewriters trying to write the complete works of William Shakespeare, end quote. But moments after his apology was released, a representative of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, blasted Mr. O'Neill for his new remarks, saying that he had defamed the reputation of monkeys everywhere. For his part, President Bush today released a statement comparing himself to rubber and Mr. O'Neill to glue. Thanks to Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass destruction. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red 90?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal.
Anaconda. Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For united we stand, divided we fall. And if our back should ever be against the wall, we'll be together, together, you and I.
And welcome back. It's Tom. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's coming up on 25 minutes after the hour. Our chat room is live and full. If you want to drop in there, go to TomHartman.com. You'll also find there links to archives of this program, 3 weeks' worth of show archives, plus an entire year's worth of selected excerpts on various, you know, rants on various topics, put together by Mike Toth down in Florida. Marvelous job that he did. And you'll find links to the various web radio stations that carry this program, iamericaradio.com, live365.com, and my favorite, radiopower.org, a listener-supported radio station, internet radio station, that carries this program to more than 10,000 people around the world every single day in more than 100 countries. Pretty remarkable. It's one of the neat things about web broadcasting is that they can you can actually track, you know, who's listening. You don't get the, you know, who they are, but you get to know what country they're in and that they're there, that they're hooked up to your server. And I think it's just remarkable. Although we are on traditional radio stations from coast to coast, and that's the base of the program, that this little web thing has turned into a really significant portion of what's going on. It's fascinating. Plus, we are streaming down from the satellite, the Sirius satellite system, stream 145. They're going to change that to 143 in the near future, I believe. And and the Sirius satellite, of course, is now standard equipment on Ford and Chrysler, Jeep, Mercedes, a whole bunch of different Jaguars. So we're getting around. Steve in Nashville, Tennessee is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES, by the way, is our number if you'd like to call 1-800-825-5937. And I want to get back into some of the stuff that Paul O'Neill said. But first, Steve, hey, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom.
How's Nashville, Tennessee this morning?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can. You are live and on the air.
Okay, thank you. Well, I love your show. I can't listen to it very often because of work, but I listen to it in the evenings. And I wanted to bring an article to your attention I saw today on Yahoo. It's by the French press, and it says, Saudi Arabia hits back at Pearl's axis of evil jibe. And in the article, Pearl is kind of lashing out at Saudi Arabia, putting them in the axis of evil. And Turkey, Al-Faisal, who's a Saudi, part of the Saudi royal family, he's called Turkey, T-R-K-I, really got hot. And I came back about this. I think it's a really significant article. I've been reading two books over this weekend. One of them is called Sleeping with the Devil by a CIA agent, and it's about the Bush family and Saudi Arabian oil.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is The Bush Dynasty by Kevin Phillips, who is a Republican. And these two books are really, really interesting. The reason this article caught my attention is the Sleeping with the Devil book, the CIA agent is saying more damaging than a dirty bomb in New York to America would be the destruction of Saudi Arabia refineries and pipelines.
Oh, yeah, and that's something that Osama has had in his headlights for some time. Steve, we got about 30 seconds here left. The thing that article is that guy in Saudi Arabia is reacting to is Pearl's new book, Breaking the Real Axis of Evil, which I have sitting right in front of me here on the desk. And in this book, Pearl says Saudi Arabia is part of the real axis of evil, and we must take them down, basically. And I'm not paraphrasing. I mean, that's my interpretation of what he's saying. And, oh, I'm sorry, it's not Breaking the Real Axis of Evil. That's Mark Palmer's book, but it's something similar to that. There's a new book that The End of Evil, it's called, by Richard Pearl and what's his name, the guy who was one of Bush's speechwriters. So, does that make sense to you, Steve?
Yeah. The only thing I'm thinking is it seems like they've kind of let him off the leash a little bit. I'm wondering if this has some political a change of plan for the administration.
Pearl? Oh, yeah, what you're seeing. Well, I'll talk about it when we come back from the break. Stay tuned. Thanks, Steve, for the call. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Switching from hydrocarbons to carbohydrates means more than rearranging letters. It could change the future of our energy economy. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Two like-sounding words have very different chemistries. Hydrocarbons are made up of carbon and hydrogen atoms, and they're key components of fossil fuels such as coal, oil, and natural gas. Carbohydrates are also composed of carbon and hydrogen, but they include oxygen. They often take the form of starches, sugars, and cellulose found in green plants. David Morris is vice president of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis. Morris argues that our future lies in an economy built around carbohydrates, the plant materials, instead of hydrocarbons, the fossil fuels.
The carbohydrate economy is actually a phrase that I invented about 20 years ago, and it describes an economy where you get your fuels and your industrial materials from living materials, primarily from plants, and that economy processes the plants near where they are grown, and that they are smaller scale and medium scale processing plants, and that they are owned locally.
Morris says all the fuels and chemicals we now get from petroleum and coal could be derived from plant materials.
The carbohydrate economy says anything we can make out of a hydrocarbon, we can make out of a carbohydrate, and at one point we did.
Morris says people used to make dyes, plastics, fabrics, and hundreds of other products from plants before the age of petrochemicals. Morris says carbohydrates are cleaner than hydrocarbons, and he says we won't run out of plant materials. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Common sense from the radical middle to help you win the water cooler wars. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. No, that was not an electronic hiccup. The dishonest deficit department Paul O'Neill last night, what was truly amazing was watching him on 60 Minutes when Leslie Stahl said, you know, don't you realize they're going to come after you? And he was like, well, why? Why would they do that? I'm just telling the truth. And apparently he was in the Bush administration long enough to figure out that things were screwed up, but not long enough to figure out that the truth is the last thing those guys want. He opposed, you know, the second round of the Bush tax cuts because he said that a, quote, a fiscal crisis was looming and more tax cuts would exacerbate it. That's as in make it worse. And guess what? It done happened. I mean, it is. Here's the state of the Bushonomics scorecard. This is from the AlMartinRaw.com website. The total national debt of the United States on a fully realized basis, inclusive of federal, state, county, and local debt. So this is, you know, if you don't just take the federal debt, but you also look at the, you know, all the states, you know, like California right now, Arnold wants them to float a $15 billion bond to bail out the state. If you look at all the various states that have borrowed all the money they've borrowed in order to be able to fill the holes because federal funding, our tax dollars going to the federal government are no longer coming back down to the states in forms of block grants and funding for particular programs. And so the states are having to do two things. As Howard Dean pointed out last night, number one, they're raising property taxes and they're cutting services, which is raising the cost of things to us. For example, if fewer poor children are available for Medicaid, local state-sponsored medical services, they're less likely to show up to be there for a doctor's appointment that costs $35 that could prevent some kind of illness, and they're more likely to end up in the emergency room, which is going to cost $3,000. Now, who's going to pay for that? You and me. It's going to be paid either by our taxes or by our insurance costs. So there was no middle-class tax cut. The middle class is paying, you know, out the wazoo for this stuff. So anyhow, if you add up all of the debt, it's $20.613 trillion. Now, maybe somebody in our chat room who is quick with the calculator function on their computer can divide 20.613 trillion by the roughly 150 million working people in America, and tell me how much debt that is for every worker in America. The total public and private indebtedness of the United States ended the year 2003 at $39.384 trillion. That's if you take private debt, you know, like your mortgage, my credit card balance, all that stuff, you add all that up, and you add it to the public debt. Now, if you take all of our assets, everything that you and I own, the equity in our homes, the value of our cars, the money that we have in the bank, you know, everything that we own, and you take everything that the federal government owns, from the public parks to the White House, and you add up the value of all of our assets, both private and public, owned by every state, city, and municipal government, you get a total of $26 trillion. That's the total value of all the public and private assets. But the total of public and private debt is $39 trillion. In other words, we are now bankrupt. Our debt is now greater than our assets. We have a negative net worth of about $13 trillion. The total expense that we are paying in interest, and you wonder why the financial sector has become the largest donor to the Bush administration, the total debt that we are paying, the total interest payments on private and public debt is three times the gross domestic product, or was for the year that just ended, 2003. We are drowning in debt. And what does Bush want to do? He wants to borrow even more money from our grandchildren and from us and give it to his wealthy campaign contributors. 1-800-TALK. Yes, Pablo in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Pablo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Thank you for calling. You're live and on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I had a comment or two about the Paul O'Neill interview.
Yeah.
And the way the mainstream press is covering it, they're covering it, but it's not. In USA Today, it was buried in the middle of the front section, something you would think as far as the Bush administration planning to invade Iraq from the get-go, that would be front page news, but this is
huge news.
Yeah, it's huge.
This is that our administration lied to us, lied to the world, had a hidden agenda, used the United States military to accomplish it, never has offered any justification for it. The pseudo justification that Wolfowitz said they did for bureaucratic reasons was lies. I mean, this is a crime. This is you talk about the constitutional definition of high crimes and misdemeanors that warrant impeachment. This has got to rise to the top.
Yeah, exactly. And you compare that to a few days ago, the big hubbub about Howard Dean 3 or 4 or 5 years ago doing some interviews on Canadian television that was, what terrible things he said. They're really the mainstream press is so biased towards power that I see as the main obstacle for the people to reclaiming this country, that the mainstream press will do everything they can to not allow that to happen.
Yeah, no, they're basically sucking up. And what you see is, I'm betting that any newspaper that you read that didn't have this on the front page was a newspaper owned by a large multinational corporation with extensive ties to this administration.
Yeah, exactly. Got to run.
Okay, thanks, Pablo. Thanks for the call. So O'Neill says he was opposed to the second tax cut. That's why he got fired. And when he brought the matter up in a cabinet meeting, here's Dick Cheney and then George Bush, and he says, you know, I don't think we should do any more tax cuts. We're running into trouble here. We just had 9/11. We got this war in Afghanistan going. Quote, Cheney interrupted him, cut him off, and said, quote, Reagan proved deficits don't matter. We won the midterms. This is our due. Now, some months ago, I had the statistics, and I don't have any idea where they've gone to now, but perhaps we can find them, about how much money Dick Cheney personally made as a result of the tax cuts. It was in the high hundreds of thousands of dollars. George Bush personally made hundreds of thousands, maybe over $1 million as a result of the tax cuts that he signed. Most of the members of his cabinet did, because most of them are getting most of their income from dividends on stocks and blind trusts, and the dividend tax went down to 15%. This is our due, says Dick Cheney. Of course, when he was talking to you and me on September 13, 2003, talking to Tim Russert on Meet the Press, he said, quote, I am a deficit hawk, so is the president. Without question, we've got to make choices. We've got to have fiscal discipline on the rest of the budget. Yeah, right. We are very rapidly dividing into an America of the wealthy, very wealthy, on one hand, those tied into the very largest of corporations, and the poor, the working poor, and the struggling middle class, on the other hand. And this, and I cannot emphasize this enough, this is a danger to democracy itself. The middle class in America it's like the ballast in the bottom of the boat that you put a bunch of stones or lead or whatever in the bottom of a boat, and when the winds blow, it keeps the boat from tipping over. When the waves are really high, it keeps the boat right up. The middle class is the ballast of America. The middle class gets wiped out. it could be a disaster for American democracy. As happened in Germany in the 1920s when the middle class got wiped out by the hyperinflation because the government had run the country into debt. We can't entirely blame the Weimar Republic for doing that. It was the previous administration that had started World War I, and the Treaty of Versailles said, hey, you guys have to pay back all these countries you invaded. And they said, okay, if we're going to pay you back all these, you know, hundreds of millions of Deutschmarks, we're going to make our Deutschmarks worth one-tenth of what they were worth before. So they inflated their currency so they could pay off their debts. It was their way of kind of getting back. Or it was the only way they could figure out to pay off the debts. There's different arguments about this. But the net effect was that the debt destroyed the economy of the country, which set the stage for the rise of fascism in Germany. Are we setting the stage for the rise of fascism in the United States? Of a government that spies on its own people, that listens in on their phone conversations, that monitors their mail, that can break into their homes without a warrant? Oh, excuse me, we already have that, don't we? Those are all provisions of the Patriot Act. Paul O'Neill, after Enron and other corporate scandals rose, corporate governance to the forefront of the national policy debate. Paul O'Neill and Greenspan put together a plan to make CEOs accountable, according to 60 Minutes. But O'Neill reports in this new book, quote, Bush went with a more modest plan because the corporate crowd complained loudly and Bush could not buck that constituency, end quote. It's like when I had Tom Tancaro, I think it is, the congressman from Colorado on this program last week, the conservative Republican, and I said, name one major policy initiative to come out of this administration that did not benefit, first and foremost, large corporations. And that did affect a large number of Americans, and he could not name one. If you lead a corporation, you have responsibility, says George Bush, to serve your shareholders, to be honest with your employees. Yeah, right. But he chose not to go along with Paul O'Neill and Alan Greenspan's plan. Tom Tancredo was his name. Thank you. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Armin in Florida has a comment about our debt. Hey, Armin, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Just off the top of my head, I didn't use a calculator or, you know, a pen and paper. 125 million people, 20 trillion, equally adjusted, comes out to $160,000 per person.
Yep. You know, where are we going to come up? Where is each way? That's or per working family or per worker. Where are we going to? Where are you going to come up with that $160,000 that you owe, Armin?
Well, I guess everybody's supposed to hope that Walmart raises everybody's wages.
There you go. Well said. Armin, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. And thank you very much for doing the math on that. 1-800-825-5937. Brian in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
A little more on the Al Martin story that you were touching on. I don't know if you read the whole thing, but he attributes $34 trillion of that debt to Reagan, Bush 1, and Bush 2.
Right.
So that's like 84%. And did you get as far as the portion where he talks about the 2,900 tons of gold bullion missing from the Treasury?
No, I don't have the whole story in front of me. I have an excerpt from it.
Well, the Government Accounting Office has questioned the Treasury about 2,900 tons of gold bullion that are missing since Bush took office, and the Treasury...
Oh, really? Since George W. Bush took office?
Yes. And the Treasury referred the Government Accounting Office to the White House, which has not responded. Maybe you can read the whole article, or I could send it to you, but I sure would like your viewpoint on that one.
I'll track it down. Well, you know, sometimes Al Martin's right out there on the ragged edge, and it's not, he's not CBS News. On the other hand, very often he's got stuff long before CBS discovers it. So,
he says this is a Treasury Department audit.
Yeah. We'll look into it. We'll look into it.
That's an interesting one.
Thanks for the heads up, Brian.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. You know, the bottom line here is that our unemployment statistics right now are the second worst, just a hair's breadth away from the first worst that they've been since the Great Depression. And the first worst was in 1983, the year after Reagan's big tax cuts took effect. Guess what? Reagan does tax cuts, the economy goes in the toilet. Bush does it, the same thing happens, and these guys think they understand economics. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Public Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC. Coach Glenn in our chat room says, look for hidden traps in any Republican legislation. For instance, in the new immigration reform bill, there's a requirement that a certificate be provided by the employer. Do you think a worker is going to stand up for their rights when they need that from the employer? It furthers the servitude of the worker. As I had suggested when Bush first proposed this, this is the reinvention of the Bracero program, or Bracero, that was in effect right up until 1964. From 47, perhaps? I'd have to go back and look. 47 to 64, I think. Which was basically a slave labor program. I mean, you know, it wasn't slave, but it was a cheap labor program. It was a sop to the largest corporations in America. And that's what these guys are talking about again. Anyhow, back to this Iraq thing. Now the Army War College is saying that George Bush has gone off the edge. They just published a report saying that, here's this from the Washington Post. A scathing new report published by the Army War College broadly criticizes the Bush administration's handling of the war on terrorism, accusing it of taking a detour into, quote, unnecessary war in Iraq and pursuing a, quote, unrealistic quest against terrorism that may lead to U.S. wars with states that pose no serious threat. They further say that as a result of these mistakes that have been made by the Bush administration, the Army is, quote, near the breaking point. Now, these guys are no slouches who put this thing together. We're talking retired Army Colonel Douglas C. Lovelace, Jr., Director of Strategic Studies Institute. He said, I think that the substance that Jeff brings out in the article really, really needs to be considered. Publication of the essay was approved by the Army War College's Commandant, Major General David H. Huntoon, Jr. And they liken the scale, get this, of U.S. ambitions in the war on terrorism to Adolf Hitler's overreach in World War II. Here's a quote from the study. The Germans were defeated in two world wars because their strategic ends outran their available means. End quote. History, those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it, as I believe Churchill said. And let's learn now. This is Tom Hartman discussing solutions and not false promises.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Animal.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you
why,
hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. One U.S. soldier was killed and two were wounded Monday in a roadside bombing in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad, one U.S. commander said. Meanwhile, on Monday, Iraq's top Shiite Muslim cleric, in a full-page advertisement, reiterated his demand for the country's next legislature to be elected as he hardens his opposition to U.S. plans for regional caucuses. The Baghdad killing was the first reported combat death among U.S. troops since Friday, when nine soldiers were killed when a medevac helicopter was shot down near Fallujah. The latest casualties were from the 1st Armored Division, the command said. Precautions in the name of air security are about to be taken to a level unimaginable in the United States only a few years ago. The Washington Post reports the Bush administration is expected to order as soon as next month the first step in setting up databases on all air passengers to be used to color code each air traveler according to his or her potential threat level. Passengers coded red would be stopped from boarding, yellow would mean additional screening at airport security checkpoints, and green would mean an only standard level of security. Airlines and airline reservation companies would reportedly be forced to turn over all passenger records to U.S. government officials who struck out in a trial program which was based on voluntary surrender of airline industry data. The Supreme Court has set the stage for a series of rulings on the reach of presidential power, decisions that could arrive just as voters focus on whether to endorse George W. Bush in the 2004 election. Since November, the justices have voted to take up five cases that test the president's power to act alone and without interference by Congress or the courts. The case taken up Friday may be the broadest of all. 2 years ago, the White House said the president had the power to designate U.S. citizens unlawful enemy combatants and hold them in secret military custody without filing charges or allowing them to plead their innocence. More after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Mushi, a small cat that formed an unlikely friendship with a half-ton bear called Mouse in a Berlin zoo, has been reunited with her companion after pining outside the bear's cage for months. Mushi has been popular with zoo visitors ever since she appeared in the bear's enclosure 3 years ago, but the pair were split up last October when the bear was locked in a cage while her living space was enlarged. Zookeepers took pity on the distraught cat that had been roaming around the zoo and sitting outside the cage, and this week allowed her in the cage with the female Asiatic black bear. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved.
I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Before we rush full-tilt buggy into the 04 election cycle, let's hear a word from our sponsors. Yes, the good folks who pay for the campaigns of George W. and most of the Democratic presidential contenders should be acknowledged before next year's vote. I say we should highlight these corporate interests now, just to get a sense of who's buying what in our land of the free. Of course, the corporate big spenders and the politicos they purchase insist that nothing is being bought, that the corporations putting up $100,000 to $1 million each want only good government. If you believe that, Pollyanna, you should check out something called Internal Political Party Documents at this website, campaignlegalcenter.org. Here you'll find the smoking quid pro quo between the corporate contributors and the political contributees of both parties. For example, there's a letter from the Republican Party chairman to the drug giant Bristol-Myers Squibb requesting $250,000. Does the letter ask for good government? Not exactly. It encloses the GOP's health care proposal, asking Bristol-Myers for any changes they'd like to make. The Politico says to the CEO, quote, "We must keep the lines of communication open if we want to continue passing legislation that will benefit your industry." There's another letter from the Republican finance chairman to the chairman of Global Crossing, the corrupt telecommunications giant that, at the time, was pushing for a federal okay of a merger. As an ante, Global Crossing had pledged $100,000 to the party with a promise to hike it to $250,000 if the merger went through. Surprise! It did. So the finance chairman wrote back to the corporate guy, "I am taking the liberty of enclosing an invoice for the additional upgrade." This is Jim Hightower saying, this corporate money is not buying good government, it's buying corruption. To stop it, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
hey, Nancy.
Am I on the air? Oh.
Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
Doug Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, if you travel on airplanes, plan on being on the radar screen of the government. You know, when I was in high school, we were supposed to read George Orwell's 1984, and I read the summary. I don't remember if it was published by Cliff Notes or if it was something that was floating around. Frankly, I don't remember now, but. I didn't actually read the book. I just, you know, I read the summary enough to pass the exam. And about, I don't know, 4 years ago or so, about the time, well, it was right after Bush was, I guess 3 years ago, right after Bush was elected, I was in Australia doing a speaking tour with Neil Donald Walsh. We were in three different cities, and that was a hoot. He's a big draw, so it was like, you know, thousands of people showing up, like in Sydney in the stadium. And I had decided to take 1984 with me because I figured, okay, George Bush is president. I had to read this book because the indications were starting to come out that times may change. And by the third night, and I was reading it every night before I went to sleep, and I don't know if it was the book or if it was the jet lag because Australia is like 12 hours different than here on the east coast of the United States. But I was waking up in the middle of the night with not nightmares, but just these horrible, dark, foreboding dreams about a Blade Runner kind of America. That was Blade Runner was based on Philip K. Dick's book, They Dream the Electric Sheep, as I recall, or something like that. An America taken over by corporations, where democracy is dead, and where everybody is, every detail of every person is known, and the government basically is a puppet to corporate interests. Now, people say, oh, such a thing could never happen. There's no precedent for it. Actually, there's a huge precedent for it. It's basically how Europe ran from about the 8th or 9th century till around the 15th or 16th century. It's called feudalism. It's how Japan ran for several centuries. It's how China ran for quite some time. There have been feudal eras in the history of most civilizations. Feudalism is where the wealthy control government. And you basically have four kinds of government possible. Five if you throw in communism, but I'd say that that's just another form of dictatorship. So let's say that there's basically four kinds of government. You have number one, rule by warlords. Those who use force and threats of force to impose their will and typically keep their countries at in a continuous state of war or cold war in order to consolidate their power. Number two, you've got theocracies, governments that are ruled by people who say that God told them how to rule, told them what to do, told them the Taliban, the kind of nation that Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell would like here. Theocracies. France was what was the year that the Pope made his speech in France and started the Crusades? I want to say 1098. In the 11th century. So you've got theocracies. And the third kind is feudal states, where the central government's power has been diminished. I mean, that was what the Magna Carta was all about, signed in, as I recall, 1254, where King John was forced by the feudal lords. The Magna Carta didn't guarantee rights to the people, guaranteed rights to the feudal lords, where they rose up and they said, you know, we're taking over. And here we have another example here. Despite stiff resistance from airlines and privacy advocates, this in today's Washington Post, the U.S. government plans to, an article by Sarah Kahalani Gu, despite stiff resistance from airlines and privacy advocates, the U.S. government plans to push ahead this year with a vast computerized system to probe the backgrounds of all passengers boarding flights in the United States. If you haven't read 1984, I encourage you to dig it out and read it. The book is a masterpiece. And, you know, if you have those kind of dark dreams that I was having, just, you know, have another glass of wine. Be sure it's organic wine from 1-888-ECO-WINE from our friends at the Organic Wine Company. Under the system, the Washington Post says, all travelers passing... I'm being facetious. I don't encourage people to use alcohol as medication. Under the system, all travelers passing through a U.S. airport will be scored with a number and a color that ranks their perceived threat to the aircraft. This is in addition to a system introduced last week to fingerprint and photograph millions of foreign visitors on arrival in the United States. The Washington Post goes on to add, business travelers who typically pay high prices for their seats will likely receive an easier pass. Now, that's interesting. I'm a frequent, or I was up until this last year, a frequent business traveler. I mean, I've got several million miles with United, and I think I had 7 million miles with Delta at one point. I used to travel around and give, you know, workshops and teach classes and whatnot, speak at a lot of conferences. And not to mention the international relief work that I've been doing for 25 years all over the world. And I don't normally pay the high prices. I always get the cheapest seat I can. But apparently what this system is going to do is it's going to say, if you pay high prices, in other words, if you're the corporate elite, then you get a pass. Now, what does this, now just let me ask you, does this make sense? I mean, the hijackers had piles of money, the hijackers of 9/11. These guys were all from wealthy Saudi families. They all bought first-class tickets. Remember, they were sitting in first class. But nonetheless, business travelers who typically pay high prices for their seats will likely receive an easier pass through security. This is bizarre. So now all a hijacker has to know is, hey, pay full fare. No problem, man. However, the information will be fed into large databases such as LexisNexis and Axicom that tap public records and commercial banks such as shopping mall mailing lists. Right, as soon as you give the airline your name, the government is doing a giant merge with all these commercial databases. You thought you had privacy in the United States? You thought that the Fourth Amendment, remember the Fourth Amendment? That odd little idiosyncratic thing that says, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Well, the Fourth Amendment died with the Patriot Act. Once a passenger is identified, the CAPS II system will compare that traveler against wanted criminals and suspected terrorists contained in other databases. The two-step process will result in a numerical and color score for each passenger. If you pop out red, they won't let you on the plane. And on it goes. You know, one of the least reported news stories over the weekend was that the new Queen Mary, I believe it is, or is it the QE2, one of the new luxury liners that's in port in England, they're afraid to let it out of port. They're going to. I think Cunard owns it. But there's concern that a bunch of underwater mines have vanished from a storage depot in North Korea. And they think that Osama bin Laden's got them, and he's going to go after cruise ships. Oh, boy. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Phil in Florida is on the line. Hey, Phil, where in Florida are you?
I'm just west of Tampa.
Okay, great.
I don't know if you heard this on the news. It was on within the last 30 minutes. The ACLU is going to enter this case as a friend of the plaintiff, or the defendant, rather, Rush Limbaugh, to...
That's great! That's great, Phil!
Isn't this great? In order to help him avoid prosecution.
Does this mean that Rush Limbaugh has to spend his $75 and become a card-carrying member of the ACLU?
I don't know. But here's the kicker.
Pardon me.
Here's the kicker. You know, the ACLU also assisted Oliver North to avoid prosecution.
Yeah, I remember.
You got to ask yourself a very easy question. What are they thinking?
Well, what they're thinking is that individual liberties and privacy protections and First Amendment rights are sacrosanct, and it doesn't matter whether it's Hitler-loving Nazis marching in Skokie, Illinois, which the ACLU defended, or the people who are false, you know, who are being held in Guantanamo Bay for years without access to a lawyer that the ACLU is trying to get involved.
But the difference is this: these people are wealthy; they can afford the best attorneys. Let the ACLU help the people who are not wealthy, and they are, Phil,
and very often they do, and those cases don't get much publicity. But the bottom line is, Phil, that if you and I start, if we were in any way, I mean, I'm a member of the ACLU, but I'm not on any kind of governing board or anything. But if you and I were, and we were in a position to make decisions for them, and we started saying, okay, we're going to support those people who don't have money, we're not going to support the people who do have money, where would that end? Once we start drawing lines and saying some Americans have more rights than others, some Americans have fewer rights than others, some Americans are more worthy of defense, some Americans are less worthy of defense, we have created a disaster. Now, that's certainly what Limbaugh is doing by saying, I should go to rehab while those poor people in the ghettos should go to prison for doing the same thing, essentially.
Well, I worked in a prison. I worked in a place called Salinas Valley State Prison, which was level 4, the highest security, an electric fence, and I knew guys who were serving prison time for doing less than he was. And
sure.
I'll give you a very specific story. There was a guy there who was a heroin addict from Fresno, California. He had been arrested twice for heroin use and gone to jail. The third time, he went and stole a used vacuum cleaner, okay, off someone's front porch, in order to turn it around and try to buy some heroin. Well, he was arrested. He was convicted. That was his third strike. He is doing life. okay?
Yeah, it must have been his third strike.
I know there was a black man there in his late 40s. He had bought, somehow he had bought a marijuana cigarette from somebody in the prison. He was out on yard, and he was walking around smoking this small joint. One of the guards sees him, arrests him, right, in the prison. They arrested him and convicted him of possession of marijuana. He's doing life. That was his third strike.
Yeah. The three strikes laws are nuts. I mean, because we are now spending, we now have more people in prison in the United States than any country in the world, and it's costing an average of $50,000 per person per year. And what are we getting for it? Bupkis, nothing. It's our this war on drugs is insane, and the way that, that's a whole other rant. Phil, thanks for calling. Thanks for informing us about Rush Limbaugh's new alliance with the ACLU. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con in conservative.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Start back at this life. Stretch myself back into the vibe. I'm waking up to say I've tried. Instead of waking up to another TV guide. It's time now to turn around, turn and walk on this crazy ground.
Yeah, sure enough, here it is. FoxNews.com. Talk radio host Rush Limbaugh probably never expected the American Civil Liberties Union to become one of his staunch supporters, but the privacy rights group was on his side Monday. That's today when its Florida branch filed a friend of the court motion on behalf of Limbaugh, arguing state officials were wrong in seizing his medical records for their drug probe. Yes, indeed. The ACLU contends that state law enforcement officers violated his privacy rights by taking possession of his medical records. So this is interesting. This is I'll dig into this a little more as time goes by. I think this is going to be a fascinating thing. You know, the bottom line is, even if you're a drug addict, whether you're rich or poor, black or white, on the radio or not, you should have privacy rights in the United States. And they should be there should be a rule of law. And I'm assuming that these records were seized without a court order on the basis of testimony sworn under oath, which is what the Fourth Amendment requires. And if that's the case, then maybe Limbaugh has a case for keeping his stuff, at least until there's a hearing in which somebody says, well, you know, okay, here's the evidence of a crime other than the National Enquirer. And then, of course, they go after it. Enough of that. Enough of that. Let's just hope and pray that that he has a wake-up. A wake-up. Rob in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on the line. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Hey, Rob, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. You mentioned that Osama bin Laden potentially could have these underwater landmines to bomb that boat in England.
Yeah, that's the concern. They've got frogmen now patrolling the boat.
Now, the way you said it, you kind of mentioned that you kind of laughed about the notion that he could potentially have such weaponry to cause destruction.
I apologize if you took it that way. I think it's a disaster, that a very dangerous thing. I mean, Osama bin Laden apparently has somewhere between 25 and 30, 28 is the number most commonly used, ships that are out floating around. A lot of them are engaged in the drug traffic to help support his operation, and a lot of the drugs are coming from Afghanistan. And they're out there, and they represent a threat to commercial shipping, and there's this concern that if they wanted to make another spectacular attack, taking down 2,000 or 3,000 people like you'd find in one of these huge ocean liners would do it. I mean, it would be another attack in terms of human death the size of 9/11. And I think that would be a terrible tragedy. My concern is that this administration is doing almost nothing against those kinds of things. It's just like with our ports. We're inspecting still 2% of our cargo, although it would only cost $7 billion. I know that's a lot of money, but compared to the tax cuts, it's squat. It would cost $7 billion to inspect every single container that comes into the United States. And this administration has vetoed or has, you know, strongly objected, prevented bills that would mandate that from making their way into the legislature. That's my concern. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number. Ruth in Orlando, Florida is on the line. Hey, Ruth, we got about
a
minute
Tom.
Left.
The guy that was calling about the ACLU, I'll say this real quick.
Sure.
Don't you think it's possible that one of the things that they may be trying to do, too, is establish a case law point? Because the Patriot Act, too, has already said that they changed it so that a wide variety of financial records can be considered stuff that you can get without a subpoena, without a court order, without it, you know, anything like
that.
And
first they have to brand you terrorists.
Included in that. So if they establish a case law where they can say that medical records are an invasion of privacy, then that could be, could that not be reapplied back to the Patriot Act?
Frankly, I doubt that the ACLU's involvement has to do with their concerns about the Patriot Act, although they are very active in that front, because Rush Limbaugh has not been declared a terrorist, and therefore he's not subject to many of the provisions of the Patriot Act. Although there's a lot of the provisions that have nothing to do with requiring that declaration. But, you know, who knows, Ruth? I don't know. It's interesting to speculate. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Switching from hydrocarbons to carbohydrates means more than rearranging letters. It could change the future of our energy economy. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Two like-sounding words have very different chemistries. Hydrocarbons are made up of carbon and hydrogen atoms, and they're key components of fossil fuels such as coal, oil, and natural gas. Carbohydrates are also composed of carbon and hydrogen, but they include oxygen. They often take the form of starches, sugars, and cellulose found in green plants. David Morris is vice president of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis. Morris argues that our future lies in an economy built around carbohydrates, the plant materials, instead of hydrocarbons, the fossil fuels.
The carbohydrate economy is actually a phrase that I invented about 20 years ago, and it describes an economy where you get your fuels and your industrial materials from living materials, primarily from plants, and that economy processes the plants near where they are grown, and that they are smaller scale and medium scale processing plants, and that they are owned locally.
Morris says all the fuels and chemicals we now get from petroleum and coal could be derived from plant materials.
The carbohydrate economy says anything we can make out of a hydrocarbon, we can make out of a carbohydrate, and at one point we did.
Morris says people used to make dyes, plastics, fabrics, and hundreds of other products from plants before the age of petrochemicals. Morris says carbohydrates are cleaner than hydrocarbons, and he says we won't run out of plant materials. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Show me a prison. Show me a jail. Show me a prison man whose face is growing pale. And I'll show you a young man with many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me an alley.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Just one last note on airport security and all these sorts of things. I've flown in and out of the Middle East a lot. And when you book a flight out of, for example, Israel, which, just to put this in context, I want to say on the record that I am opposed to many of the policies of Ariel Sharon and his government. And I think that he is creating as much terrorism as he's solving it with his heavy-fisted approach. But anyhow, that said. Oh, and the other thing that's interesting, let me just, you know, kind of just a little factoid to drop out. People talk about anti-Semitism. Arabs are Semites also. And we have this strong anti-Arab sentiment in the United States. It's anti-Semitism. Just an interesting factoid. Anyhow, they're Semitic people, they are. I have flown in and out of Israel a lot, and they, to the best of my knowledge, don't have and haven't felt the need to create extensive databases that go into people's personal lives and check them out. Instead, they do two things that we don't do in the United States. The first is they x-ray and screen all of the cargo that goes onto the plane, as well as the checked luggage. We just started doing checked luggage. We're still not doing cargo. So it's possible if somebody, you know, wants to just indiscriminately blow a plane out of the sky to ship something by air. The second is they do psychographic screening. Now, frankly, the first time this happened to me, I was very offended by it. It was back in 1980, I think, 1981, something like that. In 1980, I had been down in Uganda. I was in Kenya. I was in Nairobi, Kenya, waiting for my visa to go to Uganda. We were taking over the Numalo prison farm. There was a famine going on in Uganda, and we took over this old prison farm where Idi Amin used to kill people and lick their blood as they died as part of his religious rituals. And he thought it would give him immortality. And anyhow, we took this place over because there was, and at the time there were some 20,000 people starving to death there. Most of them, about half of them, the Karamoja people from the Karamojong from the Karamoja region, the hunter herders in the northern part of Uganda, and about half of them people just from the cities of Jinja and Soroko and Mbali and so on. Teachers, doctors, dentists, lawyers, average laborers, you know, whatever, average folks. And they were literally starving to death. And the Red Cross had pulled out because their people were getting shot at. And these people had all come to this prison, which had been turned into this feeding center, and then the food went away. And when I showed up there, there was just this one old Ethiopian priest, a guy who looked like he was 100 years old, who was trying to hold all this together, and a young woman named Anne, a nurse from Ireland, must have been in her early 20s, sweet thing, who was shot by a sniper. About 4 days after I left. Anyhow, I was sitting in Nairobi, Kenya, waiting to get my visa into Uganda, and this was my first trip into there, and I hadn't realized that I was supposed to bribe the guy, so I was waiting 3 days. I could have gotten it done in a half hour. And I thought, well, I'll take a trip down to, you know, I've got a couple of days to kill, and Saudi Arabian Airlines had these flights from Nairobi to Mogadishu. Mogadishu is the port city, and it was a kind of a resort, and it was a fascinating place, and you could go swimming in the ocean and whatnot, and the flights were like, because they were really flying, they started in Mogadishu, and then they went to Nairobi, and then they went someplace else, and they went someplace else, and then they ended up in Riyadh. This was a feeder flight. It was like $50 or something. So I thought, you know, hey, what the heck? I've never seen Mogadishu. I've heard about it. So I went down and I actually bought a ticket to go to Mogadishu on Saudi Arabian Airlines. And they gave me one of these little baggage stickers with the glue on the back that's got the Saudi Arabian Airlines logo on it to put on my suitcase or to put on my bags. And so I put one on the bottom of this briefcase that I carried back then, you know, where it was out of sight. And wrote my name and address on it, wrote my name and information on it, you know, you tag your stuff, right? And then the next day, my visa came through unexpectedly, and so I turned in the tickets and I got my $70 or $80 or $100, whatever it was, back. Never did go to Mogadishu. I've never been there. And I went into Uganda, and you know, and that went on. Okay, so 2 years later, I'm carrying. You know, I still have the same suitcase. I've forgotten I've got the sticker on it, and I'm flying into Israel. This wasn't my first trip. I'd been there before, but this was the first time I had a confrontation with this situation. I flew into Israel. I was visiting some friends of ours, Hal and Shelley Cohen, who I had hired as our first program director for the group home community for abused kids in New Hampshire that Louise and I started in 1978. And he went over in 1980, I think it was, to Israel and started what is now the largest child care program there in that country. It's called Or Shalom. And so, you know, we would pitch in and help out whenever we could. And so I was flying in to visit them. And I got to airport security and this was when I was flying back. I got to airport security at the airport in Tel Aviv. No, it was when I was flying down. I was in Germany at the time, and this was in the airport in Munich. And you had to go to El Al's special security area. And because I was flying on LL, and I went over there, and very nice young woman who, you know, very, very cordial, who was asking the questions. And I'm standing there, and you know, my suitcase is sitting there on the table, and she says, you know, who are you and where are you from? This is psychographic testing. And she's watching my eyes. She's looking for how I respond to these questions. What business did you have in Germany? What business do you have in Israel? Who do you know in Israel? Where do they live? How many times have you been there? You know, I mean, just asking these very blunt, very intrusive questions. But she's not, like, writing this stuff down. It's not going into a database. She's looking for signs of stress. And, you know, and about halfway through, maybe the sixth or seventh question, she says, and there's just a very average tone of voice, just like everything else, and when was the last time you were in Saudi Arabia? And I said, well, I've never been to Saudi Arabia. And she slams her fist down on my briefcase, bam, and yells, liar! Like that. And suddenly these two guys just come out of nowhere with Uzis, both pointed at me, standing on either side of me, and they escort me over to this long stainless steel platform thing, and they just took my briefcase apart, and then they took it, and they even kind of broke into pieces of it, and then they x-rayed everything, and then they pulled my suitcase out, and they did the same thing with that, and it was a whole half-hour ordeal, and they took me off to the corner, and they searched me. Because I had that Saudi Arabian Airlines sticker on the bottom of my briefcase that I had forgotten about. Anyhow, that is airport security. And yet, my name didn't end up in a database that was mixed with the corporate world's database. And there has never been an El Al plane that has been hijacked or blown out of the sky. I mean, this just doesn't happen. But the Bush administration looked at this as a possible way to deal with things and decided that it would be too expensive. And instead, they're building this huge 1984 Orwellian database on all of us, anybody who flies. And it just seems to me like it's the wrong way to go. I mean, if you want airport security, learn from the Israelis. They know how to do it. And it's not rocket science. It's just that you have to pay people well. I mean, you can't get a minimum wage airport screener. No, now we've got the TSA, we've got government employees. But back when these decisions were first being made, they were hiring these companies who were getting people who would otherwise be working at McDonald's to be airport screeners. And you can't get there's a certain level of quality of work involved that you've got to pay people well for. This is intense, difficult work to be questioning people time after time after time. And they do. Last time I flew out of Germany, the same thing at the airport in Frankfurt. It wasn't as thorough as El Al, but the woman who took my passport had at least seven or eight questions for me about, you know, my time in Germany, how, you know, she noticed my passport is all full of stamps from Germany, how many, you know, and I said, oh, I lived here, and then she switches into German and wants to talk to me. So, anyhow, that is airport security. We don't need to compromise privacy in order to have security, I guess is the bottom line of that whole rant. And it's just, it's like somebody in the White House is in love with well, we know, John Poindexter, in love with the idea of Big Brother, of big government knowing everything about everybody. And it's wrong. It's just wrong. And our spending priorities are misplaced, and we are therefore not making America more secure, or at least not as much more secure as we easily could in a very straightforward fashion. Our conservative alert for the day. Yeah, they're at it again. Late last year, President Bush promised retirees that, quote, if there's a Medicare reform bill signed by me, corporations have no intention to dump retirees from their existing drug coverage. What we're talking about is trust, end quote. The White House and its congressional allies backed up Bush's assertion by claiming the bill included a special tax subsidy to, quote, encourage employers to retain prescription drug coverage, end quote, for the retirees and not to cut them off. But, reports the Daily Mislead, misleader.org, just 3 months after Bush's pledge, the Wall Street Journal now reports that the White House quietly added a little-noticed provision to the bill that allows companies to severely reduce or almost completely terminate their retirees' drug coverage, quote, without losing out on the new subsidy, end quote. Gee, do you think companies will say, gee, we can get this new subsidy from the government if we keep our retirees in our drug program or if we dump them? Well, let's keep them in. Let's keep paying for it. I don't think so. George Bush actually acted to, the president did not just break his promise to sign a bill that prevents seniors from losing their existing drug coverage. He actually acted to reward companies who cut off their retirees with a lavish new tax break. Now, was this, just like a blind man in a room full of deaf people? Was this accidental? No, the provision was no mere oversight by the president. The major backers of the provision were Lucent Technologies, General Motors, Dow Chemical, and SEC Communications, all major campaign contributors to the president. A total of $2.5 million in money to Bush and his party since 2000. The plot continues to thicken. The Federal 9/11 Commission, this is from the New York Daily News, the Federal 9/11 Commission has formally decided to ask President Bush and former President Bill Clinton to meet with the panel and to extend its investigation by several months. Now, this has the Bush administration very worried. They want the 9/11 Commission to have their report done in May when the legislation that authorized the commission mandates that the report be done. And at the same time, they are stonewalling this commission. They're saying, you have to be done by May, and we're not going to give you the records you're asking for so that you can complete your job. Sorry, you can't see them. Yeah, well, those records are top secret security briefings. Well, the commission said, okay, we understand that. We're willing to have somebody with a top secret clearance go through and redact, black out everything that's not relevant to our investigation. And anything that is relevant to our investigation, if it still requires top secret clearance, we'll handle it. We'll make sure that only people with those kind of clearances have it. It won't be distributed. We will take care of the security concerns. I mean, this thing is being run by the former Republican governor of New Jersey, I believe. Well, now, but still, Bush is saying, no, we're not going to tell you what we knew about 9/11. Now, it's already on the record that on August 6th of 2001, a month before 9/11, George Bush received a daily security briefing which said that Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda were intending in the very near future to hijack commercial aircraft and use them to attack targets on the East Coast. That's already in the public record. What did George Bush do? Well, he did two things. Number one, he told John Ashcroft. John Ashcroft immediately, August 7th, the next day, stopped flying on commercial aircraft. And secondly, George Bush went to Texas and took the longest vacation in the history of the presidency since George Washington, when the government's business was part-time. And Congress only met for half the year because most of them were volunteers. George Bush took the longest continuous vacation in the history of the American presidency in Texas. And then when he couldn't push that anymore, he didn't go back to Washington, D.C. No, he knew there was some risk, apparently. He went to Florida. So anyhow, the commission would like to talk with him about that, and odds are it ain't going to happen. Pittsburgh, Chairman Thomas Keene and Vice Chairman Lou Hamilton will approach the four men, that is Clinton, Gore, Cheney, and Bush, and ask them if they will appear. This is not going to be a subpoena, it's just a request. And then they go on to say that because of alleged stonewalling by the Bush administration and by Mayor Bloomberg's office, some commissioners want to extend their probe past the May deadline for the final report. And this is what's got the Bush administration very concerned, that if this report comes out, that Bush knew and could have prevented 9/11 and didn't. If this thing comes out before the elections, it could harm them politically. In fact, would the White House even proposed? Well, I'll tell you about this after the break. Stay tuned.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol is lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Australia. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Fireback.
Show.
We caught somebody doing something right. Fred D'Amato, Pocono, Pennsylvania. He put a sign out in his front yard that says, support our troops, impeach the Bush administration. Of course, Mount Pocono jumped all over him. The borough councilman, Francis O'Boyle, said, the last couple words is what's the problem. I don't think it's right to put up a sign like that and say those things. The lawyer says it's protected First Amendment speech. John Finnerty, the borough council president, says, well, if we could all express our thoughts on a piece of plywood, just think what the neighborhood would look like. It might be a slight infringement of First Amendment rights, making him take down his sign. He's facing $500 a day fines for not having his sign. However, the story in the newspaper of Mount Pocono, New York, says that D'Amato removed the sign, but on Sunday said he planned to put it back up again. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Here in the Democracy Zone, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. In our chat room, CLLBRRT, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, has posted the link to a Frontline program on PBS about what Bush knew and when he knew it about 9/11, and is going to go post that on the message boards. If you go to TomHartman.com and click on the message board link, you'll find tens of thousands of conversations going on, you know, an ongoing discussion there. Tens of thousands of messages posted by thousands of people about various issues that we discuss on the air. So if you want to see a link to that, you know, wait about a half hour and go check it out. The Federal 9/11 Commission. Okay, here's what the Bush administration proposed. See, they don't want this thing to happen around November because it apparently. I mean, you know, why wouldn't they want it to come out? If the thing is going to clear George Bush, wouldn't you think that they would love for it to come out in October? Yes, Bush knew nothing about it. He couldn't have stopped it. It's official. Well, that would be wonderful. Hey, let's release that news the first week of November, 1 week before the elections. Instead, the White House proposed green lighting the extension of the commission. That is, letting them not expire in May, if they would agree to release their report after the November election. Now, why might that be? They then withdrew the offer, by the way. It's apparently got a little political flack for it. The White House and several agencies, this is according to the New York Daily News, this article by James Gordon Meek, the White House and several agencies have been threatened with or issued subpoenas in recent months, making it hard to finish by spring, some 9/11 Commission members argue. By the way, just a little tip, the winning ads in the Bush in 30 Seconds contest are going to be announced tonight, live, 8 o'clock, on the Internet. Go to MoveOn.org at 8 p.m. You can check it out. There's going to be Margaret Cho, Chuck D., Al Franken, Moby, Michael Moore, John Sayles, Julia Stiles, Rufus Wainwright. It's going to be hosted by Janine Garofalo. It should be very entertaining. MoveOn.org. This is Tom Hartman, straight to the heart of truth. You're in the middle of the vast, radical middle conspiracy.
You've been listening. listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Precautions in the name of air security are about to be taken to a level unimaginable in the United States only a few years ago. The Washington Post reports the Bush administration is expected to order as soon as next month the first step in setting up databases on all air passengers to be used to color code each air traveler according to his or her potential threat level. Passengers coded red would be stopped from boarding, yellow would mean additional screening at airport security checkpoints, and green would mean an only standard level of security. Airlines and airline reservation companies would reportedly be forced to turn over all passenger records to U.S. government officials who struck out in a trial program which was based on voluntary surrender of airline industry data. One U.S. soldier was killed and two were wounded Monday in a roadside bombing in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad, one U.S. commander said. Meanwhile, on Monday, Iraq's top Shiite Muslim cleric, in a full-page advertisement, reiterated his demand for the country's next legislature to be elected as he hardens his opposition to U.S. plans for regional caucuses. The Baghdad killing was the first reported combat death among U.S. troops since Friday, when nine soldiers were killed when a medevac helicopter was shot down near Fallujah. The latest casualties were from the 1st Armored Division, the command said. The Supreme Court has set the stage for a series of rulings on the reach of presidential power, decisions that could arrive just as voters focus on whether to endorse George W. Bush in the 2004 election. Since November, the justices have voted to take up five cases that test the president's power to act alone and without interference by Congress or the courts. The case taken up Friday may be the broadest of all. 2 years ago, the White House said the president had the power to designate U.S. citizens unlawful enemy combatants and hold them in secret military custody without filing charges or allowing them to plead their innocence. More after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth. And that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
A German woman caused more than $128,000 worth of damage when an attempt to back out of her spot in a parking garage ended with her car on its roof and four other vehicles damaged. Police said the woman reversed sharply out of her spot on the upper level of a parking garage in the town of Kirchen, Germany, demolishing a parked Nissan and damaging a Mitsubishi next to it. She then accelerated forward, speeding through her original parking space and over a low protective wall, pitching her Audi 20 feet down onto a lower level of the car park. The car crashed into a Renault, hit a Citroën, and finally came to rest on its roof. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Before we rush full-tilt buggy into the 04 election cycle, let's hear a word from our sponsors. Yes, the good folks who pay for the campaigns of George W. and most of the Democratic presidential contenders should be acknowledged before next year's vote. I say we should highlight these corporate interests now, just to get a sense of who's buying what in our land of the free. Of course, the corporate big spenders and the politicos they purchase insist that nothing is being bought, that the corporations putting up $100,000 to $1 million each want only good government. If you believe that, Pollyanna, you should check out something called Internal Political Party Documents at this website, campaignlegalcenter.org. Here you'll find the smoking quid pro quo between the corporate contributors and the political contributees of both parties. For example, there's a letter from the Republican Party chairman to the drug giant Bristol Myers Squibb requesting $250,000. Does the letter ask for good government? Not exactly. It encloses the GOP's health care proposal, asking Bristol Myers for any changes they'd like to make. The Politico says to the CEO, quote, "We must keep the lines of communication open if we want to continue passing legislation that will benefit your industry." There's another letter from the Republican finance chairman to the chairman of Global Crossing, the corrupt telecommunications giant that, at the time, was pushing for a federal okay of a merger. As an ante, Global Crossing had pledged $100,000 to the party with a promise to hike it to $250,000 if the merger went through. Surprise! It did. So the finance chairman wrote back to the corporate guy, "I am taking the liberty of enclosing an invoice for the additional upgrade." This is Jim Hightower saying, this corporate money is not buying good government, it's buying corruption. To stop it, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years
I'm talking about now, like the tread on a tire. Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Well, will Ralph Nader win? Win. I think that's a foregone conclusion. He will not. Will Ralph Nader run? He's sounding like a presidential candidate, says the New York Times, charging the Bush administration with messianic militarism and subservient corporatism. And the Democrats are soft-peddling liberal policies that were once mainstays of their party. You know, he's right. And this, you know, it's interesting when you think about it that Bill Clinton, who is proclaimed to be kind of the savior of the Democratic Party, saved himself very well. I mean, he was very popular, a very charismatic man, a good public speaker. He projects well. He convinces people he really cares about them. And I think in many regards, he actually does. And yet, Clinton lost. I mean, you know, during the midterm elections and during the election for his second term, the power of Democrats in the House and Senate was steadily eroded throughout Clinton's presidency. Clinton's presidency, in many ways, was a disaster for the Democrats. if you just look at who got elected where. And the Telecommunications Act and his NAFTA and GATT work were, I mean, this was the DLC. This is the new Democrats. The let's get in bed with the corporate powers Democrats. And that's what it's. Anyhow, so Ralph Nader's pointing this out. 3 years after the election, says the New York Times, in which Democrats say he cost Al Gore the White House, Ralph Nader is considering another campaign and says he will decide shortly. At this point, Mr. Nader said in an interview this week, a run depends only on his ability to collect enough money and volunteers to mount a credible effort. Otherwise, he has said he has a zillion reasons to go ahead, including, he insists, that doing so would be good for the Democrats. Ralph Nader running would be good for the Democrats. I'm assuming it's because he would make them honest, that he would call them on their BS and their ties with corporations and getting into bed with big corporate America and that kind of thing. But who knows? If you have thoughts on it, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. A great piece in The Progressive, in the January 2004 issue of The Progressive magazine, this publication that goes back to 1909, back when Teddy Roosevelt, after he left the Republican Party, became a progressive populist. And it's about the Republican strategies to privatize education. Why is it that the Republicans so hate public schools? And they have a list here of five items. And to this, I would add another. The one that I would add is that the Republicans really don't want an educated electorate. It's one of the reasons why they're so opposed. It's one of the reasons why one of the first things Reagan did when he became governor of California was end free public college tuition in the state of California. You know, when I was a kid, I spent in 1968, I think it was, I spent the summer of that year living out in San Francisco, and I was amazed to discover that in California, if you were a resident of California, you could go to college for free if you went to the University of California system, to the state college. And Reagan came along and said, we can't have any of this. What? More people having better educations? Not going to happen. Wouldn't be prudent. Only rich people should have good public, good educations. I mean, here in Vermont now, the University of Vermont, the state school. I mean, most of these schools, Michigan State University was originally Michigan Agricultural College, land grant college. Most of these schools were chartered to provide free educations to the citizens of the state. Or if not free, very, very cheap. University of Vermont now, it's last time I looked a couple of years ago, something like $7,000 a year to attend. I mean, that's a lot of money for a family that's just getting by. We add to that books and room and board and everything else. It's cheap compared to Harvard, but that's a lot of money. So clearly, in my opinion, the Republicans don't want an educated populace, because if people are well educated, they can see through the lies that are being put out by the cons. Oh, yes, we're going to have a clear skies initiative. We're going to cut mercury pollution by 30%. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, what about the fact that it was supposed to be cut by 90%?
Oh, yes, well, just don't look behind that mirror at that man. Keep your eyes over here.
Anyhow, the Progressive says that there are five other reasons why the Republicans want to privatize education. Number one, the same reason they want to privatize Social Security. It's more money for rich campaign donors. Education is a multi-billion dollar market, says the Progressive, and the private sector is eager to get its hands on those dollars. I mean, it's the same thing that happened with the Medicare bill. These are just big payoffs, big handoffs to big corporate interests, pure and simple. And they want to do the same thing with public education. Public education, by the way, is not some new radical idea. Public education was brought into the United States by Thomas Jefferson originally, who founded the University of Virginia so that anybody who could pass the entrance exams, I mean, they didn't have the exams back then, but the equivalent, could get a free education. He believed in a meritocracy of sorts. That is to say, people, regardless of their wealth, but based on their ability to function in college, should be able to go to college. And high school. And elementary school. In fact, Jefferson was so proud of his being the founder of the University of Virginia that he specified that on his tombstone it not say, "Here lies Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States." Instead, it would say, "Here lies Thomas Jefferson, founder of the University of Virginia, author of the Declaration of Independence and the Virginia Bill of Liberty," as I recall. I don't remember the other. There was three points that he wanted on there, but he didn't even want to be noted that he was president. But he wanted it to be noted that he founded the University of Virginia. He just passionately believed in free public education and created it with the University of Virginia. But there's a lot of money in education, and you got a lot of conservatives going, "Hey, we'd like to get our hands on that money." Yeah, we don't need any government bureaucrats administering that on their $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year salaries. I can administer that, and I can pay myself $800,000 a year in salary. Let me have that money. Yes. The cons, number two, the progressive says, the cons are devoted to the free market, and they believe that private is inherently superior to public. Yeah, right. That's why we spend 47% more on health care than Switzerland, which is the second most expensive country for health care in the world. And yet we have 40 million uninsured people in our country, whereas in Switzerland, nobody is insured. Everybody has not just health insurance, but eyeglasses, dental, psychiatric, everything. And we spend 47% more per person than they do, and we've got nothing. Well, we've got a bunch of rich insurance companies skimming money off the top of our tax dollars. And a bunch of rich drug companies. And old Bill Frist in the Senate sitting on $100 million or more of an empire that his family built, taking nonprofit county hospitals, community hospitals, and turning them into four private corporations. Yes, we would be glad to handle the public money and give ourselves $1 million paycheck in the process. Number three, Republicans want to privatize education because it furthers the Republican Party goal of drastically reducing the public sector. Now, why would the Republicans want to reduce the public sector? The public sector being government employees. I mean, why is big government inherently bad? I can think of two reasons. One makes sense, the other doesn't. One reason is that if by big government we mean intrusive government, government that keeps comprehensive databases on our credit card purchases and whether or not we went to a pawnbroker and knows about our medical records, that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And on that, I absolutely agree. If that's what they mean by big government, I'm opposed to it. But that's not what they mean by big government. What they mean by big government is government employees who have a union. You see, the union that represents government employees in the United States, in the education field, the National Education Association, NEA, according to the conservative Landmark Legal Foundation, is, quote, the nation's largest, most powerful, and most political union. which leads to, number four, privatization undermines teacher unions, a key base of support for the Democratic Party. This is all about trying to create a one-party state in the United States. And number five, privatization rhetoric can be used to woo African-American and Latino voters to the Republican Party. As Grover Norquist says, school choice reaches right into the heart of the Democratic coalition and takes people out of it. They call these voucher programs choice. Yes, we'll give you a $2,000 voucher. Now you can send your child to any private school you want. Oh, private schools cost $5, $6, $7, $8, $10, $20,000 a year? Well, sorry, you have a $2,000 voucher. The wealthy families who are already sending their kids to private schools, now they get a $2,000 credit, right? They've got a $2,000 voucher. They just made some bucks. You poor folks, it's really not enough to pay for the school. I'm sorry. You can continue to use the public schools. This is how school vouchers are playing out. This is as Wisconsin State Representative Chris Sininke says, the vouchers are a Republican strategy to take down public education and the unions. It is partisan politics completely. End of rant. I just wanted to share that with you. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this break.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Hi, Tom. Eddie sends me a note. I'm not sure where he's from. He says, I think it was the University of Virginia, the Declaration of Independence, and the Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom that Thomas Jefferson wanted listed on his tombstone. You're right, Eddie. Thank you very much. Interesting. I have signed up for the Democratic, the DNC emails. You know, I get emails from the Democratic National Committee and from the Republican National Committee. Because, you know, I want to keep up on what's going on. I do a talk show on these topics. I got to know. In fact, I sent $2 to the Bush for President campaign, and they made me a team leader and all this kind of cool stuff. I get all these emails every day. And I have signed up for the campaigns of a couple of the other candidates. Deans, Kucinich's, you know, I mean, I've given them my email address. But I never, ever gave Wesley Clark my email address. And it's not anywhere on my website where it could be picked up by a robot. And yet, I have, for the last 2 weeks, been getting almost daily emails from the Clark for President campaign. And I keep sending them emails going back asking, how did you get my email address? And I'm getting no response. Their emails look so much like the Dean emails. It's spooky. I mean, instead of using the guy with the baseball bat, they got a train, you know. But it's just they look, they have cloned the Dean campaign, the Dean Internet campaign. And I have some serious concerns about this guy who voted for Richard Nixon and voted for George Bush Sr. and voted for Ronald Reagan and voted for George Bush Jr. and a year ago was speaking at Republican fundraisers about what a great president we have and is now fixing to maybe overtake everybody except Dean and perhaps even Dean and could end up the Democratic candidate for president. And why is that? And where did he get my email address? I wonder if the same thing is happening to you. Let me know. You can go to our message board, tomhartman.com. Just click on the message boards, drop into the chat room, let us know. Or you can call the station, call our number, 1-800-TALK-YES. Are you getting unsolicited emails from the Dean campaign? Do you have any clue where they might have gotten your email address from? I'm just curious. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Clifton in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Clifton, welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Hi. The amount for the deficit's really, really sort of, it's beyond scary. And it just reminds me about the Roman Empire so much, because the same thing, when it was about to collapse, was happening. Oh, especially with they were taxing more on the poor people rather than the wealthy.
Yeah. There was this. There's this flurry at the end to get while you can, because the ship is going down. So grab all the gold as quick as you can. And it sure does look like that's what's going on with this Bush administration. It's like they and their buddies are just running around sucking up everything. I mean, why else would they have this insane energy policy? Let's use up there's 27 years worth of oil left on the planet for the planet. Let's use it all up right away. Why? Make money.
Yeah, it's utterly almost incomprehensible what they're doing.
Yeah, I think it goes way beyond incomprehensible. I think it's an absolute abdication of Bush's oath of office and of the responsibility of any political party in the United States to protect and defend the Constitution and to act in the interests of the American people. This is just beyond the pale what the Republicans have been doing in the last 3 years. It is absolutely mind-boggling to me. Clifton, thanks for the call. Ed, you're going to make another point? I guess you're gone. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Appreciate your calling in. And we're going to go to a break here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, telling the truths that multinational corporations don't want you to know. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Switching from hydrocarbons to carbohydrates means more than rearranging letters. It could change the future of our energy economy. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Two like-sounding words have very different chemistries. Hydrocarbons are made up of carbon and hydrogen atoms, and they're key components of fossil fuels such as coal, oil, and natural gas. Carbohydrates are also composed of carbon and hydrogen, but they include oxygen. They often take the form of starches, sugars, and cellulose found in green plants. David Morris is vice president of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis. Morris argues that our future lies in an economy built around carbohydrates, the plant materials, instead of hydrocarbons, the fossil fuels.
The carbohydrate economy is actually a phrase that I invented about 20 years ago, and it describes an economy where you get your fuels and your industrial materials from living materials, primarily from plants, and that economy processes the plants near where they are grown, and that they are smaller scale and medium scale processing plants, and that they are owned locally.
Morris says all the fuels and chemicals we now get from petroleum and coal could be derived from plant materials.
The carbohydrate economy says anything we can make out of a hydrocarbon, we can make out of a carbohydrate, and at one point we did.
Morris says people used to make dyes, plastics, fabrics, and hundreds of other products from plants before the age of petrochemicals. Morris says carbohydrates are cleaner than hydrocarbons, and he says we won't run out of plant materials. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Doolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the things love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Forgive them, Father,
Murkowski has written an article called GOP has abandoned the environment, which he just lists the, it's just a simple list. The administration has stopped designating critical habitat for listed species. This is under the Endangered Species Act, except under court order. It has stopped adding to the list of threatened and endangered species unless ordered to do so by a judge. It has moved to exempt the Forest Service from abiding by the law on the pretext of fire prevention. It has worked to weaken the requirement that endangered species be protected from pesticides. In truth, they are acting as agents for the timber industry, the mining industry, land developers, big economic and other economic interests that sometimes find their profits slightly decreased in the short run if they need to obey environmental laws. Just there it is. There it is. Somebody please tell me one piece of significant legislation that has been put forward or passed by the Republicans that is purely for the benefit of we the people, those who our government is supposed to serve. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Jim in Atlanta is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You are live and on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
This is the first time I've listened to it. I was cruising around on my the radio stations and in my iTunes and found it.
Great.
I'm of a really different political viewpoint than you, but I agree with your diagnosis that big corporations are the cause of most of the subversion of our political system. But where I would fault you is in engaging in the two-party polemic. You know, the Republicans are good and the Democrats are, or in your case, the Democrats are good and the Republicans are bad. I think the big corporations own both of the two parties, and there's very little difference in the way the two parties are going to govern as long as they continue to have a stranglehold on our political system.
To a large extent, Jim, I don't disagree with you. I have been outspoken in my criticism of Bill Clinton, for example, and the Democratic Leadership Council, which has been the attempt on the part of the Democrats to embrace corporate America, and his sellout to large multinational and transnational corporations that definitely didn't have the interests of America at heart in signing NAFTA and GATT. He created that giant sucking sound that Ross Perot warned us about. And his signing the Telecommunications Act that led to this huge media merger and the new concentration within the cable companies and the telephone companies. I think it's just wrong. I believe that we should have local businesses and competition, not monopolies. And monopolies are destructive. And I think that the Democratic Party, to a large extent, has sold out. To the extent, the problem is, and this is the problem that James Madison identified back in Federalist Number 10, if you go back and read the Federalist Papers, where he was begging that there never be factions that arise in the United States, that is, political parties, because our system is first past the post, winner take all, it doesn't provide for minority parties to be well represented, so it requires a two-party system. And whenever you have a third party, that third party is always going to harm the party that's most closely aligned with, as we saw with Nader and Gore, for example. And it wasn't until 1841 that John Stuart Mill invented the phrase representative. It's one of those brain farts there. It's a
representative come to me. Democracy.
No, it's the proportional representation.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like they have in England or they have in Canada,
sure.
You know, where you have all these little minority
parties. And they form coalitions
right.
to govern.
Right, exactly. And that's not possible here because of our governmental system. And so the Australians had the same problem we did. And so what they did is they went to instant runoff voting, which then does allow for multiple parties. But because we have this system, until we change it or fix it, we are really stuck with two parties. And in my opinion, I've had Republicans on this show who are lamenting the fact that their party has lost its way and sold out to corporations. And I agree with them. I worked on the Goldwater campaign in 1964. I was once a true believer on that side. And I also see, you know, the Democratic Party going down the tubes also. And I think that Howard Dean and Dennis Kucinich, I think there's a few of the candidates who have the possibility of bringing it back. But if Wes Clark gets in, he's another DLC candidate, and it's going to be, you know, it's the same old, in my opinion. That's my concern, frankly.
Those candidates will bring it back, and I'll tell you why, because You can't exercise power in this country if you don't have political power, and you don't get political power if you don't have the money. And the people that are getting the big money are the people that are representing the interests of the big corporations. I've worked
and that's
on that.
And that's the cancer at the core of it. You know, in England, if you're going to run for the House of Commons, you cannot spend more than £100,000. Therefore, you can't raise more than £100,000. Therefore, you're not going to be that deep in the pocket of anybody.
It's a dilemma because, you know, if we didn't or if we did put limitations on the amount of money that people could spend, of course, then that would be limiting people's right to express themselves by supporting financially the candidate of their choice. But what I do think we ought to do is limit the size of corporations. I don't think that there's any sense in having these multi-billion-dollar corporations who have no loyalty to their nation or to the workers of a particular country. They don't benefit the country except for, providing cheap goods. And at some point, you know, our consumerism has just outpaced our needs.
Spot on, Jim. Spot on. I wrote an entire book about this. It's called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. And the founders did not intend for there to be large corporations. In fact, the Boston Tea Party was a revolt against the East India Company's attempt to pull a Walmart in North America. And they actually, the Tea Act that led to the, in 1773, that led to the Tea Party was actually a reduction in the tea tax. That taxation without representation they were so upset about, it was a tax cut for the East India Company that was going to allow them to wipe out all their small entrepreneurial competitors on the East Coast. And the colonists said no. And we had strong anti-monopoly laws on the books in the United States. Lincoln had to suspend a lot of them in order to get war material. And so Senator Sherman in December of 1890, submitted Senate Bill No. 1, which became the Sherman Antitrust Act. And we've had it now diluted six times since then by legislative attempt. And basically, when Reagan came into office, he said, that's it. We're not going to enforce the Sherman Act anymore. We're going to pretend it's not there. And we had this mergers and acquisition mania of the 80s, you know, with Milken and all these guys. And Clinton never went back. You know, Jimmy Carter busted up AT&T, and that was the last time in the last 30 years that anybody has tried to enforce the Sherman Act, and it's just wrong. Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Next time you call, be sure to bring up what you disagree with me about. I love to hear from people who disagree with me. Bill in Ohio's on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. Unfortunately, I agree with you, so I guess we can't argue.
That's okay. I'll take it.
I wanted to pass on something good I heard this morning on both C-SPAN and my local public radio station. C-SPAN was doing a Republican-only call-in asking for comments on a Christy Todd Whitman article on the replace of moderates in the Republican Party. And I was really surprised. So many Republican call-ins were asking how they didn't want to vote for Bush anymore. They were very felt very disenfranchised. And I thought, this is really anomalous. And then a little while later, I was listening to local WCPN outside of Cleveland, and Republicans called in from the Cleveland area saying they weren't going to vote for Bush anymore, that the moderator said, we're going to have to do another show just for equal time.
Yeah.
Really surprising. Does that surprise you?
No. I tell you, Dwight Eisenhower's rolling over in his grave right now. You know, Barry Goldwater would be, you know, I'm surprised that his ghost hasn't returned. It's just, I've got, in fact, sitting right here in front of me with no apologies, his final autobiography, and which I reread about, I don't know, a year ago. These guys really believed in some principles. I mean, some of their beliefs, in my opinion, were wrong, and they thought that we could accomplish things through corporate power rather than government power, and it's just, you know, they didn't realize that they were embracing feudalism, and they were hysterical in their fear of communism, which it turns out in retrospect was misplaced, but to some extent. But they did have principles, and George Bush, in my opinion, the current occupant of the White House, is not a Republican in principle, and his own father, you know, is getting his guys to write op-ed pieces and stuff. I mean, you know, back before the war in Iraq, we had I think it was Brent Scowcroft wrote the piece in the New York Times, and it was leaked that was at the behest of George Bush Sr. arguing against preemptive wars. And what we have is an administration of extreme reactionary radicals, extreme right wing radicals. That's the Bush administration, and a lot of Republicans are waking up and going, "Whoa, what happened to our party?"
Yeah, I wanted to ask you to revisit an issue I was listening to you on the web last week, and I lost the signal. You were just about to comment on how labor was once very represented in newspapers. Do you remember talking about that?
Well, I've talked about it often. I don't believe that. See, I think that the big problem that we have with news in America right now is that, and most people who are probably under 30 years old don't have the perspective on this because it's been this way for about 20 years, mm-hmm. 25 years anyway. The big problem we have with media is that there is this pervasive myth that the job of media, newspapers, radio stations, television stations in their news is to present the news, that is the truth, simply the facts, nothing but, unbiased, fair and balanced. And when I was a kid growing up, and certainly much more so before that even, but I grew up in the 1950s, 1960s, mm-hmm. newspapers had open bias. I remember in Detroit, we used to get the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press. And the Detroit Free Press, as I recall, was the pro-labor paper, and the Detroit News was the pro-corporate paper. I might have them reversed in my mind now. Mm-hmm. But generally, every town had one newspaper that had all kinds of news about labor unions and labor this and, you know, this and that. And another paper had all the articles about big business and this business and the stock market and all that kind of stuff. And now, since we've had this huge agglomeration of media where about 90% of all the total media that Americans are exposed to in any context on any given day is owned by fewer than 15 companies, corporations, and these corporations have taken to saying, well, we will simply present the truth. We're not going to present anything with a bias. This is what I actually like about Fox News, is that they say, hey, we're right-wingers and we're proud. We should have other people on the left saying, hey, we're left-wingers and we're proud. Then you'd have an opportunity for a legitimate debate.
Yeah, but we have a hard time finding you. I mean, I have to listen to you over my computer.
Well, I would encourage you then to contact whatever radio stations in whatever city in Ohio you are on and to say, hey, if you are running right-wing talk radio during the noon hour and there's more than one station in your market that has talk radio, the other station, whichever station, if you've got more than one, the second station should take on this program because they will make money. They will reach out to a large audience rather than having them fight over, you know, the conservative half of the pie, have them go after the centrists and the Democrats and the liberals as well. It's happening all across America, and it's working well. Bill, thanks for the call. I got to move along. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Ann in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Should Ralph Nader run, Ann?
No.
Thank you.
Of course, I had problems with him running the last time when it looked like the election was going to get close because Ralph Nader claims that his ideals are tend to run more Democratic, less Republican, and he is against the things that Bush has done, like with environment and things like that. Yet, when he saw that it looks like it was going to be a very close election, he should have bowed out and supported the Democrats rather than to let a Republican get elected. And if he goes in again, he knows that's exactly what he's going to be doing. So I have problems with a man that says he's for certain ideals and then acts a different way.
Yeah. I agree, Ann. Thanks for the call and thanks for your
comment. Well, I wanted to let you know real quick.
Oh,
there's a
sure.
website
mm-hmm.
That Ralph Nader has. It's Ralph Nader Exploratory. I think .com. But if you put in the keywords Ralph Nader Exploratory, he wants input from people whether he should run or not. And if everybody that feels the way I do wants to go make a comment to Ralph, now's the time to go do it and let him know what you think.
Well said. Thank you, Ann. Well, thank you for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, and Billy in California is on the line. Hey, Billy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, Tom. You know, lady has it right with this specificity. What Nader has to do is just at the last minute not compete in the states that are close. You know, it's important to have as many opinions out there as possible on the stump, but in a Florida, in any place that was close, he should have then bowed out in return, of course, for an important position for people on his party in the administration. That's the way mature people, or as we say it in Yiddish, a mensch, would behave. I wanted to talk quick about Paul O'Neill.
And that's what Michael Moore split with him over. That's when Michael Moore left his campaign.
As should any thinking American. Dumping us the lie, the big lie that Nader said was there's no difference between the two. Democrats are incompetent, and Republicans are evil.
Okay.
So there's a big difference.
Paul,
yeah, but you wanted to talk about Paul O'Neill.
Yeah, just real quick, a one-liner on that. And then I'd like to say something about the international companies. Paul O'Neill is clearly a disgruntled employee. That doesn't mean he told lies. It just means he doesn't keep the big lie going. It means he told the truth. He's willing to talk. Not he's willing to tell complete lies about the people he worked with. All he has to do is tell the truth, and that's what he's doing.
Yeah, clearly, and with the documents to back it up.
Yes, but you'll notice that they'll try to paint him. They'll say he's a disgruntled employee as if, and therefore he's lying. No, it just means therefore he broke the wall of silence.
Yeah.
You know, this is a problem, this thing with these big companies, because in some cases companies need to be big. I'll give you an example, something I do know about. The company Intel, they make the semiconductors. Well, you know, if we didn't have a standard on semiconductors.
I know where you're going with this, Billy, and my point is that, you know, Intel can get very large making semiconductors, but that doesn't mean that they should go in the business of running subways.
Well, they're not, are they?
Well, they're not, and that's the whole point. I mean, look at General Electric and how many different kinds of businesses that they own. Look at ABC and Disney. I mean, this is where things become monopolistic and destructive. Billy, thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Show. Bruce Willis was in Iraq. Did you hear about this? He went to Telefar, I believe is the way you pronounce it. And he has a band, Accelerator, played some rock and roll, and, you know, there were hundreds of U.S. soldiers there. Anyway, after he did his rock and roll, he took the microphone. He said, we're here to support you, and that's fine. Okay. But then he offered the soldiers listening $1 million. out of his own pocket for the capture of Saddam Hussein. And then he said, and if you catch him, just give me 4 seconds with him. Isn't he just a man's man, huh?
Who are you, then? Just another American who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo.
He's always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
There's a new voice on IE America Radio Network. It's Never Better with Marina Colby. Sundays from 11 a.m. till noon Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. Never Better is an energetic show that explores and analyzes how you can be more successful people at work and in relationships. So make sure you tune in to Never Better with Marina Colby every Sunday from 11 a.m. till noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're in the Democracy Zone. I'm Tom Hartman, and just to clarify, Billy, the comment that I was making before, from 1787, when the Constitution was ratified, up until the 1890s, what was called the charter-mongering era, when states started competing with each other for John Rockefeller's money and lowering their regulations, corporations were required to have a statement of purpose that included only one thing. This corporation is incorporated to build a railroad. This corporation is incorporated to run a gas station. This corporation is incorporated to, you know, whatever. One thing. You could do one thing. And it was illegal for a corporation to own another corporation. And it was illegal for a corporation to do more than one thing. If you wanted to do a second thing, you had to start another company to do it. And when corporations, number one, started horizontally or vertically integrating that and reached a point where they became anti-competitive, that was called a monopoly and it was illegal. And so, you know, I have no problem with Intel, but I do have a problem with corporations that are buying all these huge, you know, just, I think it's self-evident. Anyhow, Rich is on the line. Hey, Rich, we got a couple minutes left here. Thanks for calling. You're in California, as I recall.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm a longtime fan of yours, back from the CompuServe ADD Forum days.
Oh, cool.
I'm a child psychiatrist out in California.
Great.
You know, there's one thing that's always puzzled me, and let me express it to you. I think there's something we're missing in this dynamic between, you know, Republicans and Democrats. And that is, you know, I was brought up in the era where I thought there were two political parties and tried to persuade each other to whatever their point of view is. But I think there's another process going on. I think that what's happening is that the agenda is not to persuade people to one side or the other. It's just to keep the electorate thrashing. We're really in such an inflamed condition and really so polarized. I think the agenda is really to keep the country polarized, angry, and ineffective. And the alternative we have to a democracy is just the rule
it's autocracy. Autocracy. Rule by the rich. Rich, good point. I think the missing piece from what you just said is that the cons, in particular conservatives, are playing not by the rules of competition, where you try to beat somebody by being better than them, but by the rules of war, where you try to utterly destroy your competition, regardless of tactics. And that's the big problem that I see. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Networks. Thanks for joining us today. Our program produced by Louise Hartman. Our music from Brad Walrod. Shar Jones has been running the board. Tune in tomorrow. Same time, same place.
Exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fire.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.